Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Chris Cameron, my co-host, Felicity Sidnell Reed, and our guest this week, novelist, journalist, blogger, and publisher, Shane Joseph. Shane, you've got a new story in an international anthology of true stories collected from around the world, which was released in mid-October. What prompted you to submit a story for this particular collection?
Well, the theme, fear and courage, was quite interesting, because I have had to deal with fear all my life, and it's run in my family all our lives. We've had to move countries, we've had to find homes, and there's always the thread of fear that underlies that is, are you doing the right thing? Are you going to succeed? So I submitted this story. It's not about me, it's about my father, who's had a very interesting life, to the anthology. And this anthology is actually part of four. There are four books. Two are coming out this year, which is Fear and Courage. And the other one, I think, is Human Kindness. And then next year, there's going to be Love and Loss and Struggle and Success. And I submitted also to Struggle and Success. But that story was my story about a writer and the writing life. And I was fortunate that both stories were accepted. So this year I've got Fear and Courage with me, and next year I'll have Struggle and Success. And they're nicely compiled. They're stories from, as I said, all over the world, mostly from the English-speaking world. So you've got the United States, Canada, England, Australia, and New Zealand. And the book is published out of New Zealand. So that's what happened, and I'm quite pleased with how it's turned out. It's made my dad a minor celebrity in his nursing home.
I'm sure it has, yes. It's a sort of a timeless story, really, isn't it? Movement of people around the world and starting new lives and what it takes, really, the courage to overcome the fear in a way, isn't it? The title of the anthology I like is Fear and Courage. Can you tell us about the actual collection? What types of stories will people find in the collection?
So in this particular book, Fear and Courage, there are 25 stories. And they're all covering the lives of people who are in their 60s and above, so mostly looking back on their earlier lives. So, for example, there's one about the 65-year-old woman stepping outside her comfort zone to visit Antarctica. There's the young social worker confronting an abusive father and a husband while the man had a gun pointed at her. There is the gay woman's experience of coming out in the 1960s. In Toronto. It was not an easy place to come out at that time. There's a man confronting his claustrophobia to have an MRI. There's a woman fighting to keep both herself and her unborn child alive in Hitler's Germany. So, and then there was one about, which really I enjoyed, was the older couple who are trying to go cycling downhill in British Columbia, and then they get taken over by a whole bunch of young cyclists who go whizzing past them and nearly knocking them off the road. And sort of shows the example that, you know, youth is more agile and more active, and as you get older, these things are becoming more and more difficult to do.
Youth passes us by, more or less, literally and figuratively. As you said earlier, you've contributed to a future volume of this as well. Could you tell us about that story? That's about you, isn't it?
Yes, that's about my writing life and how I, dreamed of being a writer when I was a child. And I then did nothing about it for about, several years until I was in my 40s. And then it was really rather tough to start as a second career, when the best years would have been, in the 20s and 30s, writing about things. But I kept going, and my life as a writer has become, now I've been doing it for about over 20 years myself. It's an interesting life. It's never panned out the way I thought it would. But it has brought me to an interesting place, and I have met some really interesting people. I've written some interesting stories. And so I had to put this all together in about a five-page essay and presented it to them, and they seemed to like it. So that's the book about my writing life.
One of the wonderful things about life is the twists and turns it takes when we end up going down a path that we weren't expecting to go down. I think that's what makes life worth living, in fact. Now, your story in Fear and Courage is about your father, as you said. Can you tell me what makes your father's story, what it makes it dear to your heart and special to you as well as to him?
So my dad's a very quiet man. I mean, he would be rather embarrassed trying to get in front of a microphone and on a stage and make speeches. But for a very quiet man, he has got into some really unusual scrapes. He's had more lives than a cat. And that's why I called the story Outliving the Cat. So I thought that, you know, his story would be an interesting one. It's an example to all of us. As I've told him many times, I said, Dad, you know, not only showed us how to live, but you're also showing us how to die. He's a real example to us. He's 88 years old. He's still alive, lives in Coburg in a nursing home, and, you know, looks back on his life and smiles. When I read, I'll read a little section from his story. You'll see that he's had some pretty interesting scrapes.
I'd love to hear you read something. Can you read to us from Outliving the Cat then?
Yeah,
just
sure.
To finish us off today?
Yeah, I'll do that. Outliving the Cat. My dad's many lives began at the age of 37. He lived in fear at that time, scared that he would die of a heart attack, just as his father had done at the same age. For Dad smoked, suffered from hypertension, and was overweight, despite having been a bodybuilder in his 20s. I was entering my teens back then, and there were three younger siblings. Not a time to die, especially when Dad was the sole breadwinner. So Dad took a walk in the dusk one evening, threw away his cigarettes and matches, and didn't touch another smoke again. If he had withdrawal symptoms, there were no signs. If he suffered, he did so in silence, and we never knew what he went through. Relief is my guess. When I was in my late teens, Mum rushed into my room one dark morning, screaming, "Your father is dead at the top of the road." I dressed hurriedly in the dark and rushed to the scene of the tragedy. A car had crashed through a fence and was half inside a house that straddled a bend in the main road. "Drunk driver," I was told by onlookers, "fell asleep at the wheel." Dad, who had been walking to the bakery to buy bread for the family's breakfast, had been swiped by the car, tossed over a barbed wire fence, and deposited not far from the wall from which the rear end of the still-smoking car stuck out. The ambulance had yet to arrive. Dad was not dead, but groggy, and he had broken his hand. I bundled him into a taxi and took him to the hospital emergency room. The nurses, occupied by much larger calamities, did not pay much attention to his injuries. "Oh, he'll mend," they said. And he did. A few years later, and now employed, I was returning home from work late one evening in the pelting tropical rain. As I rode my scooter down Stately Ward Place, a white boulevard bordered by colonial bungalows, I saw a bus that had skidded off the road and embedded in the wall of a nearby mansion. It reminded me of Dad's previous accident, and I wondered whether by some quirk of fate my father had been involved again. When I arrived home, Dad was sporting a fractured arm. He had been on that bus. I learned not to speculate after that. His complaint was not so much about his injury, but the fact that someone had stolen his glasses in the confusion. Flash forward a few more years. I was working for an airline in the Middle East. Dad was working for the same airline in the old country, Sri Lanka. The news flashed across our CRT screens that an aircraft had been blown up by terrorists on the runway at Colombo Airport. Knowing how thin the security at that airport had been when I had worked there, I sent Dad an intercompany telex, seeking information, even deriding the puny security arrangements back home. He answered promptly, "Don't criticize. I was on that plane." It turned out that Dad had been on a business trip to the Maldives, and as per his usual habit, had boarded last. The plane was behind schedule by 20 minutes due to a late arrival from its previous point of departure. As he was entering the cabin, the bomb, which had been timed to go off while the aircraft was in mid-air, exploded, throwing him out of the plane and onto the mobile stairway. His allocated seat was blown to bits. On the stairway, struggling to get to his feet, he realized that he had lost his glasses again. He was not to be deprived of those expensive lenses this time, so he began groping for them as fire and mayhem raged around him. He claims that an angelic voice kept urging him to get up. "Please get up," which he did, but only upon finding his glasses. And then, invoking the speed of Carl Lewis, he ran for the terminal before any further explosions occurred.
Thanks so much, Shane Joseph, for coming in today and telling us about the concert and the launch of Hill Spirits 4 at the Spirit of the Hills Festival of the Arts, October 24th to 26th at St. Peter's Church, 240 College Street, here in Cobourg. And thank you especially for telling us about your story in the anthology and reading to us. Shane will be emceeing the concert and the readings at this exciting event, as well as singing a song himself, for which I, personally, can hardly wait. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.